Thomas, on to your paper.
Thank you. That's agenda paper number 11. At its September meeting this year, the ISB discussed joint operators accounting in the separate IFRS financial statements for an interest in a joint operation that is housed in a separate entity. This discussion was in response to a request from a national standard setter to review how such investments are reported in the separate IFRS financial statements of the joint operator. The national standard setter thinks that the joint operator should account in their separate IFRS financial statements for the interest in joint operations that are housed in separate vehicles in the same way as for the interest in subsidiaries. This is under current standards at cost in accordance with IAS 27 or at fair value in accordance with IFRS 9. And yeah, depending on a change to the standard at equity. At its meeting in September, the ISB did not discuss the accounting set out in staff paper number 12. The discussion instead focused more on the likelihood that there might be different approaches being taken in practice. As a result, the ISB decided to undertake additional consultation as expeditiously as possible with national accounting standard setters and accounting firms to identify real-life examples of difficulties in practice to help it assess the magnitude of accounting issues in separate IFRS financial statements of the joint operator. This consultation should also include the IFRS Interpretations Committee. The observations of the Interpretations Committee would help the ISB to assess whether there are any issues that need to be addressed. Accordingly, we want to ask the Interpretations Committee three questions. The first one, is the accounting for interest in joint operations that are structured for separate vehicle in separate IFRS financial statements a prevalent issue in practice, or is it expected to be a prevalent issue in practice? The second question, what are your views on the two different readings of IFRS 11? View 1 as settled in paper 12 from the ISB meeting in September this year, and view 2 as outlined in paper 11. And what observations did you make with respect to these two different readings? And finally, what are the examples from practice in which preparers face difficulties in applying IFRS 11? To the accounting for interest in joint arrangements that are structured for separate vehicles in the separate IFRS financial statements.
Pardon? I found a question. Thomas, has there been any outreach being done so far? Because now you are asking for our view, what happens in practice and so on, but has been there any other outreach activities?
First of all, I want to say, you know, this consultation of the committee is part of the outreach, and for the other part, has there been done any other outreach? I want to hand over to Alan Rakava, who deals with this project on the board line.
We've been aware that there's been an issue with the accounting through two aspects. One is we have regular meetings with the major accounting firms, and we've raised the issue, several times we have been told there are problems, particularly when you have differences between the output you receive and the investment you've got. So that's this lack of symmetry in the sense of investment level versus uptake, for example, from a mine that you're developing. So that's one area. The second that's come from one of the national standard setters, and he said it was prevalent in their area, but they asked for a particular issue, and this is what there was in one of the papers you've got there, the appendix of the paper, where they wanted to simply for us to ignore the rights associated with a joint operation, just go to equity accounting with separate financial statements, and that was the catalyst for that particular paper. But in developing that paper, of course, you had to work out what you think the accounting is, and it highlighted the problem. I think Tony probably summed it up in the last paper, is that when IFRS 11 was developed, it was developed with a narrow range of joint operations in mind, and that's why we didn't have any accounting examples that were developed fully, and we should have had some examples probably in IFRS 11 as part of the development, would have been highlighted the issue. But we're aware that there's a problem, and the firms have indicated that they will provide us with some examples of that.
Andrew? I wasn't quite clear on whether the submission was a request for clarification or a request for an amendment.
It's not a submission.
Right.
It's not a submission. It was a request to the ISB to have a look at it. So,
have a look at it.
So, and because it went to the board, we didn't discuss the actual accounting, but we realised the ISB was a potential problem with the accounting. So came back to see, given that you're in practice, if there was any feedback you could give us.
Okay. About that. Well, I think that there are some issues with accounting for a joint operation house in a separate vehicle. The difference in the ownership percentage compared to whatever instrument it is, or your proportion of rights to the assets and interest in the liabilities. Issues around, I'll call intercompany transactions, using the term loosely. I think some issues around how much, what does the revenue line of the joint operator actually report when the joint operator takes its share of the output and sells it on? Does it report the share of the output by the joint operation to the other joint operator or operators? So those are the issues that come to mind. But I'm not sure any of those are different issues to separate financial statements. I don't think there's any conflict between IFRS 11 and IAS 27, because IAS 27 is silent on the measurement of an interest in a joint operation in separate financial statements. And this paragraph 26 from memory of IFRS 11 tells you what to do, and gets put broadly, says you get the same accounting in the separate statements as you do in the consolidated. So I read this paper as being focused on the separate financial statements. I'm not quite sure what the issue really is if you just focus on the separate piece.
I understand, you know, the request to the board was to change that for the separate financial statements so that you get different accounting. And,
okay, so that's what clarification request, that's a request for a change. Discussion.
Laura?
This is a real issue in practice, how to account for GEO when separate financial statements for those GEOs that are structured through separate vehicles. It's prevalent in Italy, it is going to be prevalent in the UK with the change you have had in accounting requirements, where you will be able to use in the UK IFRS more frequently in separate financial statements. And obviously you have plenty of jurisdictions such as in Canada and so on. It depends the extent to which separate financial statements are being used. Okay? It's prevalent in Europe, even if in Europe, separate financial statements are not always established on IFRS. So yes, it is going to likely to develop. Now, as Andrew is saying, I believe that there is indeed a conflict or clarification is required about what standard trumps what. And it may be difficult to, maybe a difficult issue to address, because it requires understanding of what is the purpose of separate financial statements. If I understand properly, IFRS 11 GEOs, you account for your direct rights in assets and direct obligations. So which means that you have assets and you have liabilities you should recognize as such. But on the other hand, you have shares in an entity. So which one are you going to account for? And so far, in separate financial statements, as far as I understand, we have never looked through shares in accounting in separate financial statements. But here you have a standard that says that you also have direct rights and direct obligations. So what do you do? So this should be clarified. I believe that if the spirit of IFRS 11 is followed, because you have direct rights and direct obligations, so the treatment should be the same, whether you are in consolidated financial statements or in the separate financial statements. But this would be a significant change compared to how we have accounted for shares and entities in separate financial statements.
Let's just cycle on through Scott, John, and then Tony.
Well, One of the questions asked is what we think of the analyses, view one presented by the staff to the board, and view two written up in this paper, focusing on that for a moment, I was confused by the analysis the staff presented. The staff said you recognize, the joint operators recognize their equity investment at as required by IFRS 9 and then recognize their rights under the finance lease. Well, that's pretty much the same as what they'd do if they decided it was a joint venture, except that instead of recognizing their equity shares at cost or fair value, they do it on the equity method, which would start out at cost and then bump up. So, I mean, you've actually got the stats write-up suggests that the difference in the assets that would be recorded under the joint operation versus the joint venture is not very big. Is that correct? I'm not sure who I'm looking at. But I can tell you're all pointing at each other, so.
Essentially, I think the difference, because I agree, you know, and if you have a look at some of these things, you say, well, why don't we just have joint venture accounting and then just have a contract, account for the contract.
Right, if you have a finance lease with your joint venture, you're going to recognize the finance lease.
I think the difference is a joint operation. A joint venture versus a joint operation. Sure, in a joint venture, you might have some contracts over some assets.
Mm-hmm.
But in a joint operation, the presumption is, because of its nature, you've got direct rights and responsibilities over all of them through mechanisms.
Which is why I would have thought that the joint operation accounting was more of what's presented in view two, because you're going to recognize your share of the assets and liabilities of the joint operation. That share might not be 50-50, the same as your ownership. For example, if the finance lease was the reason you wound up with joint operation and the finance leases were actually split 40-60, then the fact that the equity was 50-50 would not lead me to recognize all the assets and liabilities of 50-50. I'd recognize them 60-40. But I thought that the analysis presented in the staff paper, that was not what I thought joint operation accounting is. So maybe I don't understand, or maybe it's because I'm in my head thinking the joint operation accounting applies when you have enforceable rights to the assets and there are enforceable obligations on you for the liabilities, so you wouldn't feel like you needed to limit it at the finance lease. But I would have thought it would go down to that level. Regarding the issue of separate financial statements, again, because I think joint operation accounting is you're saying I have these assets and liabilities on my books because they are my assets and liabilities. They are not the assets and liabilities of another entity. If they were, I'd be doing joint venture accounting. They're my assets and liabilities, therefore you should not get different accounting when you're applying separate financial statements.
Mm-hmm. Clay, if you wanted to come in?
Yeah, I think Scott and Laurence pretty much said what I wanted to say. That seems to me that absent in the framework a clear statement that separate financial statements and consolidated financial statements serve different purposes. I don't think we have this notion of having different purposes. And hence, we don't have in the framework any concept that more importance should be given to legal form in one case or less in the other case. I don't think we have any such things. Then you have to be consistent in the way you prepare your statements, whether separate or consolidated, in the way you analyze rights and obligations. So if in the consolidation one came to the conclusion that you can override the existence of a legal entity and say these assets are mine or these obligations are mine, I don't see why, from a consistency point of view, you could reach a different conclusion when drawing the separate accounts of the entity which has such rights and obligations. For that, you will need to have a clear statement of the different purpose on different basis of preparation, giving more importance to legal form, in one case. I don't think we have that. So I think view two clearly expresses that position, in my opinion.
John?
First of all, I think the issue is prevalent in practice. I mean, in any jurisdictions that prepare separate financial statements under IFRS have the issue about the accounting for the interest in the joint operation in the separate financial statement. I think on the two views that are set out in the paper, I mean, it seems to me that, and I have to read them a few times to grasp, it seems to me that view one is predicated on the view that you're accounting for rights and obligations, but it seems to me that the implication of that is you wouldn't need to differentiate between joint operation and joint venture accounting. You would actually account for whatever rights and obligations you had, and that might be an interest in an entity or it might be an interest in individual assets. View two, on the other hand, it seems to me that that's the way joint operation accounting is under IFRS 11, but it does sort of imply that you're using an override of the legal structure, which seems to me to conflict with the discussion we had earlier about the fact that you're accounting for rights and obligations. So I'm not sure that I see view two as being exactly compatible with IFRS 11, where we say what we're accounting for in a joint operation is our actual rights and obligations. I think in the separate financial statements, it makes no sense to me that you would not account for the same rights and obligations that you have that the entity has in the consolidated financial statement. So the only way of giving a different view would be to provide an exemption from IFRS 11 in the separate financial statements of an entity that accounts under IFRS 11 in its consolidated financial statements. But that would obviously be a change to the standard. The other issue here is actually the implication, which is also a big issue, is the implication for the financial statements of the entity, the joint operation entity itself. Because if all the assets inside are rights and obligations of the actual venturers, then there might be an argument that there's absolutely nothing to recognise or very little to recognise in the financial statements of the joint venture entity.
Sorry? To me, the standard at the moment is absolutely clear what you do in separate financial statements. And if you've concluded that you've effectively dispensed with the veil of incorporation because of the contractual arrangements that pass the rights and obligations out, then you should account for those in the separate financial statements. And I do think the challenges with it come exactly back to what we were talking about in the last paper, which is that if you are using other facts and circumstances to conclude you've got a joint operation, suddenly that's difficult because the rights and obligations that you've got are not as clear as they would be if it was straightforward contractual rights. So I do think IFRS 11 is clear, and it says do the same accounting in a separate financial statement.
Wayne, may I?
Please, Walker.
Okay. With reference to the fact that this issue is relevant in the separate financial statement, I totally agree. I think that the submission has been prepared by Italy and we are facing the issue in the separate financial statement. I agree with Tony that also in my mind the standard is clear, indicating that you have to apply the same accounting treatment in a consolidated and a separate financial statement. But what we have tried to focus on are two or three main elements. The first one is that the separate financial statement has a different function from the consolidated financial statement. It is clear in the framework, as Philippe indicated, and it's also clear that you have to present two different sets of information. And so it explains the first thing that you recognize the same items in the same way, even though it's clear that in a separate financial statement you should give a different information from those presented in a consolidation. Second is the fact that it appears to be a strange inconsistency because there is some element that seems to be inconsistent because for a subsidiary in which you have the control and which you really have the possibility to do whatever you want with the assets of the entity, you recognize this according to cost of fair value in a separate financial statement. Otherwise, when you have a joint control, and so something that is less than a total control, and so you are in a IFRS 11, and it's a joint operation, you have to recognize the interest in the assets and liabilities. It seems a little bit in contradiction control is lower, but the way in which you represent the assets is stronger than the opposite side, in way in which you have a stronger control, but you recognize the legal title represented by the shares. The third element is legal problem, because in a separate financial statement, I do not have a direct assets or liabilities. I have only some costs. So I have some shares, and this is the item that I should recognize in the financial statement, in a separate financial statement. Different view is in a consolidated financial statement, in which the stocks are eliminated in order to be represented the assets and the liabilities. These, I think, are the main points that has been indicated. It's clear, we know exactly that what is written in the standard. We have really well understood this, and we have focused on this several times. It's clear that we are trying to figure out some sort of way out in order to avoid to have very problems, very big problems in the application in the separate. And one item would have been the proposal made in September to use the equity method and to collect, use this train also to try to verify if the IASB has some idea to make some amendments regarding the separate financial statement. This is more or less the picture that we have, but as I said, there is it's clear what is written in the standards. It stands in conflict with some other items and some in contradiction with some other way to represent subsidiaries or other kind of entities, and there is also a very big legal problem, because what I have is not assets and liabilities, because I have no contracts on this. I have only shares, and what I should represent in a separate financial statement should be shares, not the real assets and liabilities underlying this. With reference to the accounting, it's very interesting the different view presented, but I share the start point. In my opinion, the correct view is view 2, not the first one that is confusing, and I didn't really understand what I should do with the value of my shares in order to represent, and I also see some elements of the risk of double counting of the same item. So with reference to the second question of the staff, my view is that the correct way to represent and what is written in IFRS 11 is the second view, so the one in which you are making a sort of proportional consolidation, and so you are eliminating the equity of your investment.
Okay, well, something you said got people's attention, because I have, something you said got people's attention, because I have three lights blinking now. Tony, Joanna, John.
I think it was around the assets or liabilities that you account for in the separate financial statements, and whether it's different when you have control of a subsidiary. Because I think if you have control of a subsidiary, but all you own is the shares, all you're entitled to is a stream of dividends that flow off that shares, those shares, and you would account separately for any other assets and liabilities. So if you'd written a guarantee, it would eliminate on consolidation, but it would appear in the separate financial statements. The logic for joint operations is that, in fact, your rights go beyond owning the shares and being entitled to a dividend flow. What you are entitled to is some of the assets, or you are exposed directly to some of the liabilities. And so I think it's actually entirely consistent with what you do with a subsidiary. You account for the cash flows to which you're entitled, and because you're not entitled to simply the net, that's why you're not accounting for it as a joint venture.
The point that I made is that if you have a subsidiary, you control the board of directors, and you can do what you want without any element of discussion with others. On the contrary, if you, in order to have a joint operation, you have to make the first step, that is to recognize or not the presence of a joint control. Joint control means that there are other partners in which there are unanimous decision on several matters that are relevant for the ongoing activities and strategic activities of the entities. So even though you can have a sort of direct interest in the assets and liabilities, you are not the owner of the assets and the liabilities. If I have an entity that I control with 100% of my shares and this asset is a refinery, it's a different situation from a case in which I have a refinery inside a vehicle in which me and you split 50% of the shares, in which there is a contract that all the output of the refinery is in our hands and can be sold only to us. So we are in one of the cases or other factor circumstances, and that we can use it. I think that what we have tried to underline is that when you are speaking about separate financial statements in which the legal form has in our civil code a strong view, you have in any case in your hands only shares in a subsidiary and in a joint operation, because in a joint operation what I will receive is in any case the outflows of a dividend.
Perhaps the best illustration of it is a liability. Because if you are, you have a direct enforceable obligation for a liability, then that can be enforced against the parent company irrespective of the subsidiary. If you have the shares of a subsidiary, whilst it might be unlikely, the veil of incorporation means you could walk away from that liability and strand in the subsidiary. And I've always thought that is the critical difference between a joint operation and a joint venture, and that's what drives the different accounting.
Joanna?
I absolutely agree with Tony, and I have to admit I grappled myself in thinking about this. What is the difference between a subsidiary and this joint operation? Because, yes, the subsidiary, you just show the shares at cost or valuation or whatever. And I think it is that fundamental difference that you do have a direct right and obligation in those assets. And the fact that somebody else has a say in it is actually not relevant to me. It is the fact that it is direct. And as Tony says, that's the whole point of what a joint operation is, that it is as if you hold it yourself. And within a subsidiary, you may 100% control it, but the subsidiary, but it is the dividends that you've got the right to. You cannot just go and deal with the assets. You don't have a direct right in those assets or the obligations. So I'm absolutely of the view, and I think if I understood you correctly, Luca, you said that the purpose of the separate financial statements, and I might have got this wrong, was to get the legal form, and I certainly don't see that that is the point of the separate financial statements. Again, the separate financial statements is what are the assets and the liabilities of the parent, and as John actually said earlier, I would actually argue that if there is, the joint operation is housed in a separate entity, arguably, the question is more, actually, what are the assets and liabilities of that entity that they're housed in, because actually the rights and obligations all belong to the people who've got the joint operation. Mm-hmm. So arguably there is actually zero rights to assets or liabilities in that entity. So I'll shut up.
Let me see if I understand where we're going here. Doesn't this harken back to something Laurent said earlier about the other facts and circumstances? If you take the view that other facts and circumstances don't matter if you cannot pierce the corporate veil, which I think is what Tony said, if you cannot pierce the corporate veil, then you do not have a joint operation, wouldn't that significantly limit the issues, Laurence, that you were talking about, or do you still see a bigger population there? And I get a shrug, and that's fair. That's fair to an ambush question, I guess.
Why is that you push or you interpret the facts and circumstances by tying them to the contractual or legal terms?
Yeah.
Contractual or legal terms, and that you just don't go to the substance.
Or you say the contract and legal is the substance.
Yeah.
Either way. Charlotte, please.
I think I was initially of Lucas' view. It seemed unfair for a joint operator to include more than a parent would. But actually, I think it is consistent, because if a parent controlled its subsidiary through different lists of rights other than through the shareholding, the separate financial statements of the parent would still show all those rights, so which is the same as for a joint operator. So I think you're in a consistent basis. The difference is the feature is that the rights and the economics are coming via a different source than the shares, so that at separate financial statement level they stay. I also think I did disagree with the bit that says that separate financial statements should follow the legal form. I can think of lots of situations where you don't, the recognition being the main one, you don't legally own it, you still show it as if it's yours.
John, last word.
Just to reiterate agreement. I mean, I think Luca made the point that the legal form is you just have a dividend flow from the entity with the joint operation. I would suggest if you only have a dividend flow, then you don't have a joint operation. You actually have a joint venture.
Philippe, very last word.
And for Luca, for the sake of clarity, Luca, I did not say that legal form is more important in a separate account. I said it is the same as consolidated. You should have the same view of what to recognize.
Michael and other staff, how would you summarize?
Okay. I've taken a few notes, and so I'll just run through what I think we've heard. I mean, first of all, and obviously what we were doing was coming to you with this, with a request from the board for some input to take back to them. We heard that it is a common issue because separate financial statements are common in many jurisdictions. We heard that there's been wider recognition of joint operations than perhaps was initially considered. So therefore, yes, it's a common issue because of that. I think we also heard that it's clear that the standards say that you should have the same accounting in the separate financial statements as in consolidated in respect of your joint operations, because they're talking about the rights and the obligations that you're accounting for. And we also heard just the last point from John about that if you don't have these rights and obligations in the separate financial statements, then you probably don't have a joint operation. That's a pretty significant, recognition of that. As for sort of view one and view two, we heard some comments about that view one doesn't really reflect the distinction between the joint operation and joint venture that IFRS 11 portrays. View two does reflect the requirements of IFRS 11, but there was the question that I think actually John, you raised about the clarity of the rights and the obligations, which I think ties back to the comments from the previous paper about, you know, making clearer, you know, when do you have a joint operation versus a joint venture, and the need that those rights and obligations need to be effectively sufficient to pierce the veil of incorporation. I think that's the key.
Okay. Gentlemen, you have enough?
I'll say enough.
More than enough? Information. Not from the discussion.